Ever heard the phrase, two things can be true at the same time? Well, get ready for a legal case where that really applies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're diving into the case of Kishon Birch.
Okay.
A Florida case, by the way, that'll make you rethink how possession is proven in court. Birch was convicted of firearm possession, but get this.
What's that?
Acquitted of murder and the sentencing enhancement that requires actual possession during a violent crime.
Whoa.
So how is that possible?
Yeah.
That's what we're untangling today. And for all the lawyers and law students listening, trust me, the nuances here are super relevant to your work.
I bet. What makes this case so fascinating is that the seemingly contradictory nature of the verdicts.
Right.
It really highlights how the legal system can sometimes produce results that at first glance appear paradoxical.
Okay, so let's break this down. It all starts back in 2012. Birch is charged with second-degree murder and firearm possession by a convicted felon after a fatal shooting. The victim's daughters were present during the incident, but their testimonies are where things start to get interesting.
Yeah, the daughters described a violent altercation, they even saw blood, but neither of them explicitly mentioned seeing a gun.
Mm.
This absence of a smoking gun, so to speak, is going to be a key element throughout this whole case.
So if no one saw a gun, how could a jury convict Birch of possession?
Right.
This is where I get tripped up.
That's where the legal distinction between actual and constructive possession comes in. Actual possession is pretty straightforward. You have the firearm on you within reach. You're holding it. Essentially, it's immediate and direct control.
Okay. Makes sense. But what about constructive possession? It sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
Well, constructive possession is a bit more nuanced. It means you know about the firearm and have control over it, even if you're not physically holding it at that exact moment. Think of it like having keys to a safe where a firearm is stored. You don't have the gun on you, but you control access to it. Crucially, in Florida, both types of possession are illegal for convicted felons.
Okay, so now we're getting to the heart of the puzzle.
All right.
The charging document against Birch specifically said actually possessed, but he was convicted based on constructive possession.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be unfair to the defendant if the wording is that specific?
That's a valid point, and it's something the court grappled with.
Yeah.
However, they ultimately determined it wasn't a fatal flaw in the case. The document, even though it said actually possessed, correctly cited the Florida statute that covers both types of possession.
So it's more about substance over hyper-technicalities.
Exactly. Plus, the jury received clear instructions explaining what constructive possession means. This ensured that Birch fully understood the charges against him, regardless of the wording in the initial charging document.
That makes sense. But here's where my brain really starts to melt. The jury rejected the sentencing enhancement requiring actual possession during the crime, but still found him guilty of possession.
Yeah.
How can those two things be true at the same time?
This is where the case gets really interesting, and it exposes a crucial legal nuance. You see, that sentencing enhancement has a higher burden of proof. It requires actual possession during the crime itself. But the general possession charge simply requires possession at some point before, during, or even after the crime. Think of it like this. The sentencing enhancement is like an extra layer on top of the cake. You need more ingredients, more proof to add that layer.
Wait. So you're saying the jury could believe he possessed a gun at some point, but not necessarily during the shooting itself? That's wild. But how did they prove possession at all if no one saw a gun?
This is where the power of circumstantial evidence takes center stage. It's like putting together a puzzle. You don't need to see the entire picture to get a clear idea of what it is.
Right.
In this case, Birch was in a small kitchen with the victim when she was shot.
Okay.
There was a matching bullet found. While no one saw the gun, the circumstances themselves strongly suggest he had control of a firearm at some point.
So even without seeing a gun, a jury can convict based on a web of clues. That's a powerful concept for lawyers to understand when building a case.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's a key takeaway for any lawyer arguing a case. You have to be able to connect the dots, present a compelling narrative that weaves together all those seemingly small details.
So Birch v. Florida is really a case study in how those little pieces of the puzzle can add up to a conviction. It's like that old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
But wouldn't this be a problem for defendants? Couldn't someone be wrongly convicted based on circumstantial evidence alone?
That's where the concept of reasonable doubt comes in. It's the cornerstone of our criminal justice system. The prosecution has to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. So while circumstantial evidence is powerful, it still has to be strong enough to eliminate any reasonable doubt in the minds of the jurors. In Birch's case, the jury clearly felt the circumstantial evidence met that high standard.
Okay, that makes me feel better about the fairness of it all. But before we move on, I just want to touch on something you mentioned earlier, the jury instructions. You said those instructions clarified the meaning of constructive possession.
Right.
But what about those charging documents? Don't they have to be super specific, like a legal recipe with exact measurements?
Well, think of it like a recipe, but not one that needs to be followed word for word. The key is having the right ingredients, the essential elements of the crime, clearly outlined.
Okay.
In Birch's case, even though the document used the phrase actually possessed, it correctly cited the statute covering both actual and constructive possession. This means the legal ingredients were there, even if the wording wasn't perfect.
So it's not about being hyper-technical. It's about making sure the defendant gets a fair shot at understanding what they're being accused of. But what I still find fascinating is how the jury could reject the sentencing enhancement, but still convict on the possession charge. That seems like a tricky concept for lawyers to grasp.
Absolutely. This is a crucial point for any lawyer arguing for or against such enhancements. You need to understand the specific level of proof required. Remember, the enhancement in Birch's case required actual possession during the crime. The general possession charge only requires possession at some point. That difference in the burden of proof is critical.
So even if a jury thinks, we're not 100% sure he was holding the gun during the shooting, they could still convict on the possession charge based on other evidence.
Exactly. And that brings us to another major takeaway from Birch v. Florida, the power of separating the crime itself from the sentencing enhancement. These are two separate beasts with different evidentiary standards. A skilled lawyer knows how to navigate these distinctions, how to argue for or against enhancements, depending on the specific facts of the case.
This case really throws a wrench into any simplistic view of possession in a legal context. There are so many layers. But how does this case, decided back in 2012, impact legal practice today? It seems like something lawyers and especially law students should know about.
Birch v. Florida serves as a powerful precedent, particularly in Florida courts. It clarifies how actual and constructive possession are applied in firearm cases involving convicted felons. This case also reinforces the importance of jury instructions in ensuring a fair trial. The court's emphasis on those instructions and how they clarified the scope of the charges against Birch highlights the importance of clear communication in legal proceedings.
It seems like there's always more to learn about the finer points of the law. What other practical takeaways should lawyers and law students be thinking about after this deep dive?
One key takeaway is the importance of thorough case preparation. Lawyers need to dig deep, understand the nuances of possession, and anticipate how circumstantial evidence might play a role in their cases.
So Birch v. Florida isn't just some obscure legal case. It's a roadmap for how to approach similar cases, how to think about evidence, and how to understand the often complex relationship between charges and sentencing enhancements.
Precisely. And for law students, this case is a perfect example of why we study case law. It's not just about memorizing rules, but understanding how those rules are applied in real-world scenarios and how seemingly small details can have a major impact on the outcome of a case.
It really highlights the importance of staying on top of case law and understanding the reasoning behind those seemingly bizarre verdicts. But for those of us who aren't lawyers, what's the big takeaway here? Why should we care about a Florida case involving firearm possession?
That's a great question. Birch v. Florida forces us to think about the power of circumstantial evidence, not just in the courtroom, but in our everyday lives. Think about how often we draw conclusions based on the circumstances, even without direct proof. Whether we're evaluating news stories or making decisions or just trying to understand the world around us, we're constantly piecing together information and interpreting clues.
It's like that classic Sherlock Holmes line, you know, you see, but you do not observe. We're all detectives in our own way. But I never really connected that to how the legal system works.
Exactly. Birch v. Florida shines a spotlight on how those same principles of observation and deduction apply in the legal arena where the stakes are much higher.
Yeah. It's a sobering thought, realizing how much weight circumstantial evidence can carry. But it also makes you appreciate the safeguards built into the system, like the reasonable doubt standard you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. And that's where skilled legal representation comes in. A good lawyer understands how to present or challenge circumstantial evidence, how to weave a narrative that either supports or undermines the prosecution's case. Birch v. Florida is a reminder that even without a smoking gun or a confession, a case can be won or lost based on the strength of the circumstantial evidence.
So while this case might seem like a deep dive into the weeds of Florida law, it actually offers valuable insights for everyone, not just legal professionals. It makes us think about how we interpret information, how we form judgments, and how the legal system uses those same cognitive processes to arrive at a verdict.
Birch v. Florida serves as a potent reminder that law is more than just memorizing statutes and applying them mechanically. It's about understanding the human element, the power of storytelling, and the complexities of evidence.
This case really has me rethinking how I view the legal system and even how I interpret events in my own life. It's definitely a case that will stay with me and hopefully with our listeners as well. So until next time, keep those brains buzzing and remember to always
deep dive.